For the final farming programme of 2024, we're going to review the year's finances.
When you take inflation and everything else into account, then debt levels are at historically low levels, which just indicates a lack of confidence to invest at home.
And look ahead to the first big farming event of 2025.
The theme this year is facing change, finding opportunity. It seemed absolutely right to recognise that there are a lot of challenges in the industry, but equally there's a lot of people out there who will see every challenge as an opportunity.
Plus we'll talk Christmas with agricultural chaplain Alan Robson. Sean's here with the last bit of pre-Christmas agronomy advice, and we'll see how the markets are doing.
The Week in Agriculture. This is the Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
Well, good morning. Hope you've had a good week. All prepared for the week's festivities? No? Nor me. This is the Farming Programme podcast for Sunday, the 22nd of December, 2024. As ever at this time of year, we take a look back at what's been another challenging year and forward to the new year. This time with Brian Richardson, Head of Agriculture at Virgin Money. Brian, welcome once again. It certainly has been a challenge, hasn't it?
I think it has been a challenging year. I mean, I think there's been some good areas. I think our livestock farmers have generally had a more settled year. So, you know, dairy has been okay. Beef and sheep prices have been better during the year, long overdue, but better during the year. You know, there's been quite a lot of challenge around cereals, I think, mainly because of lack of harvest from previous year's bad weather. Thankfully, this autumn has been a busy autumn, so that looks better to next year. But there's obviously, you know, sheds that aren't as full as people would like to be at this time of year. So that'll move on. I think from a, you know, finance point of view, generally we've seen a fairly settled background. You know, we remain very positive about the sector and supporting farmers. But the thing that you know, looking at the background to it all, there is a lower level of investment in farming going on at the moment, which is concerning. We're back down now to 2016 levels of debt for the sector. Don't necessarily want more debt in the sector, but when you take inflation and everything else into account, then debt levels are at historically low levels, which just indicates a lack of confidence to invest, I think.
That lack of confidence seems to be the key to this. I know we've had the budget and so on, but there is a reluctance everywhere I go and everybody I talk to say, I'm going to buy that new combine, I'm going to build that new shed. A lot of farmers seem to be worried and a little nervous.
I think it's understanding what the future looks like, really. And I think the whole, you know, we had Brexit, so we knew policy in England would change. We had a great vision from Michael Gove that never quite came to fruition in terms of Elms and SFI, and that was taking it. So lots of talk in terms of net zero, what we should be doing for that in terms of moving forward, in terms of productivity. But the policy maybe hasn't necessarily followed that. And then we've had lots of false starts. As I say, you know, what am I going to be expected to do with net zero? Because, you know, I'm being told I just need to produce this food as cheaply as possible. And what should I be investing in the future? And then that investment has become more expensive because of, you know, very high inflation. So steel and everything went through the roof. So more difficult decisions. I think we were probably just getting into a position where people were feeling, right, what do I need to do and look forward? And then, of course, we had the budget.
Yes. Let's talk about the budget for a moment. No, let's not sort of go over old ground too much. We know of the protests. We know of the objections. We know how farmers are viewing this. But leaving aside APR, BPR and the future for family farms and so on, the budget's having an effect in lots of other respects, isn't it? And it's the same as every business.
Yeah, and I think if I look across the business community, you know, it's tough at the moment. Not necessarily for all farms, but for a number of farms, national insurance, minimum wage has an impact. And if not directly, then the people they're supplying, and I was talking to some meat processors the other day where, you know, their bill has suddenly increased by significantly. And so their margins are already being squeezed, as is the supermarkets, et cetera. And unfortunately for farming, it tends to be the bit that gets squeezed the most. So challenge from that, I think. And I think just in terms of this sort of gentle feeling we were starting to move forward, and then a bit more uncertainty with these decisions, a bit more unknown. And I think negative sentiment generally just stops people being able to move forward at the moment.
a little bit of good news, as you say, in terms of some of the livestock sector. But as we move into 2025, do we have any bit of good news in the crystal ball for the year to come?
Well, I think we've got to be careful and not talk ourselves into total depression, because I think the industry remains doing a really good job supplying masses of really high quality food, and we must never forget that's the job in hand. I would hope, and there doesn't seem to be any great indicators of significant fluctuations in price. Cereal prices aren't great at the moment. But moving through, I think, it's not huge margins, but there are margins to be had. I think the focus needs to be on your own business, doing what you're doing really well, making sure you understand how good your performance is against others and where you might look to improve things. And then I think it is looking forward then and saying, right, where do I really want to be in 3 to 5 years' time? What are the, SFI is here to stay, so what am I going to plug into an SFI to get those support payments? What am I going to do to make my business, better and bigger? And what do I really need to be focusing on? Because I think agriculture is a long-term business, and we need to be thinking slightly medium to long-term, even if some of the background we're in at the moment is a bit more uncertain.
Yeah, focus on what you can influence and maybe not spend too much time worrying about what you can't control.
Yeah, and there's a hope that interest rates will start to ease down next year, perhaps not as quickly as people would like, but certainly not necessarily be going up. So that's a positive there. Inflation within reason now is coming down. We've still got very high energy prices, but fertilizer, hopefully current indications are it's not going to get any more expensive. So as always, and it's an overused word in our sector, but resilient is how I always describe farming, and it really is, and very good at adapting to the circumstances and moving forward, but it certainly doesn't get any easier for farmers.
No, again, I don't want to rehash over all the budget stuff, but there's probably never been a more important time for farmers, as with all businesses, really, to seek professional help. If you are in a situation where you're being adversely affected by the budget and by business generally, don't just sit there and try and muddle through. Talk to your bank, talk to your professional advisors, talk to your accountant.
Yeah, very much so. And I think we had a meeting with 150 farmers in the room. It had been put in place several months ago about succession planning, but obviously moved into the consequences of the budget and changes to inheritance tax. And I think what came out of that was really everybody is now thinking about that future. What do they want from the future? Talking to their professional advisors. There's a concern about the cost of that, but I think it is important you do invest a bit of time at least with your advisors, just talking through what the options are, looking at the options and making sure that you are planning forward. Succession, I think, has been something the industry hasn't necessarily been bad, has been pretty poor at. So I think this has triggered a lot of conversations, which, there's a lot of background difficulty here, but I think if those conversations are had at an earlier stage, then perhaps there may be some benefit in that across families as succession planning and who wants to do what comes to the fore a little bit more. But recognizing, it is very much individual circumstances. I think the other thing we need to be doing is just watching out for everyone at the moment. There are people who are really concerned about this. Some of the older generation of farmers who don't have a lot of time to make those plans. And I think we just need to keep a weather eye on them, support them where we can. Obviously, organisations like RABBI and FCM are very active at the moment. And we need to be prepared to signpost and support people in those areas. Because there are some people who feel really up against it and are concerned about where they are at the moment.
Yeah, I think if there is anything positive to come out of the budget, it will in some ways force people to actually attend to these matters and have those conversations.
Yes, and I think we're very, as a bank, we're very sympathetic to that. We're understanding. We will help in those conversations where we can, and as those plans move forward, whether it be reorganizing partnerships or bringing in limited companies or however people are going to organize it, that may then require some further adjustment to things like securities that we hold, etc. We'll be sympathetic about how we deal with those and just work through them. And I think that the industry has come together a little bit in terms of, we've got a big problem here, how are we going to support it, how are we going to support farmers and see it through and maintain what we have, which is a successful, if not difficult at times, industry to be in.
Brian, well, that's good to hear. We do face another challenging year, but then I don't think farming has ever had a non-challenging year, but we'll muddle through one way or another together. So it just really remains for me to wish you and yours and everybody at the bank a very happy Christmas, a happy 2025, and go and switch off now for a couple of weeks.
Thanks very much for that, Steve, and the same to you and your listeners. Thank you.
Still to come, we'll look ahead to the first big farming event of 2025, the Oxford Farming Conference. But now, for the last time in 2024, let's take a walk through the fields with independent agronomist, our crop doctor, Sean Sparling. Morning, Sean.
Yes, very good morning to you too, Steve. Yeah, three more sleeps and it's here again. It doesn't seem 5 minutes since last Christmas, but there you go. Not a lot to report, obviously. This will be short and sweet because clearly not much going on land-wise other than a few bits of beet still being lifted and some wheat going in into the odd field once that sugar beet's out. Nothing agronomy-wise either, really. So this will be my last agronomy report for 2024. Thank goodness for that. I can hear the shout go up. Thanks very much. Nice to be appreciated. So oilseed rape then, just a few bits still to do with propyzamide. Remember, you're okay till the end of January next year. You can go on to a frosted or a damp leaf, but do go on the Corteva website and look at the stewardship guidelines just to make sure you're protecting any watercourses, because if we stop propyzamide from getting into the water as far as we can, then we protect propyzamide as an active ingredient moving forward. Just simple steps to do and a little bit of thought put into it, that's all it needs, because doing that means we protect what is an absolutely vital active ingredient. So do please be careful out there. As I said last week also, there's some data on the Corteva website about reducing the dose rate of propyzamide. You don't have to go with full dose. It all depends upon the target species, although I guess that most of the curb is pretty much done by now. And if you have anything in with that curb, whether that be fungicides, insecticide, trace elements, then you don't want to be going on a wet leaf or a frosted leaf. You need to accommodate them in the conditions that you're applying. Now, as far as cabbage stem flea beetle goes, remember we saw a heck of a lot of cabbage stem flea beetle activity this time last year, but the wet of last autumn does seem to have once again significantly reduced the levels. We're already seeing that the weather plays a big part with cabbage stem flea beetle, and this autumn the activity for 2024 had been pretty minimal, really. A lot of people, of course, pulled out of oilseed rape after last autumn when they lost so much, and they swore never again. But as it's turned out, there's really been very few problems with cabbage stem flea beetle autumn 2024. So just like in autumn 2020, after that autumn of 2019, that wet autumn, this doesn't seem to be being a cabbage stem flea beetle year so far anyway. Some years are going to be worse than others, and this year is not too bad. You can find larvae as you slice up plants, but there's nothing on a scale that strikes any level of fear into me. And remember, if the maggots you're finding are headless and legless, they'll be cabbage root fly, they will be fly larvae. If there's a head but no legs, then they'll be rape winter stem weevil or another weevil. And if there's a head and legs, then it'll be the cabbage stem flea beetle larvae. Disease level's fairly low and being held by the weather now, really. So prioritise any smaller, more backward crops. If you do have a fungicide to get on, they're always going to be your priority for fungicides. But to be quite honest, I think the weather's going to do more good than any fungicide is now. It needs to be warm enough for a fungicide to assimilate within a plant and move around. So as things cool down over these next few weeks, that fungicide becomes an absolute waste of time and money. Now, as farms shut down for Christmas, make sure someone's still out there keeping an eye out for pigeons, which have really started to hammer some of the rape in the last couple of weeks. They don't have a Christmas break like we do, and they will enjoy your hospitality without question if you let them. So get your bangers, crashers, whizzers, flashers, etc. dusted off and out in the field if you haven't already done so, strategically placed, and monitor them regularly. I think that's the biggest key to it. We all know that Christmas is a time for giving, so give those pigeons a reason to go and visit your neighbours those oilseed rape. Slugs as well, less of an issue in the rape, but they are still out there, certainly out there in the wheats, particularly the later drillings, which are very slow to emerge and grow away from any damage where they're active. Just know where your hotspots are, really, and do unto the slugs before they do unto your wheat. Of course, once it begins to look a lot more like Christmas, it turns colder and we get away from this current mild spell, then the slugs are going to move way down the profile. But for now, do stay alert to that danger, and it really is a real danger in some of these fields. But cereal agronomy generally pretty much put to bed now for Christmas and generally looking very, very good. I think, in fact, farms look as good going into Christmas 2024 as I've seen them look for a number of years. You know, there was a bit of mildew about in the winter barley earlier on, but that cold snap a few weeks ago killed that off. There's still a bit of yellow rust about out there in the wheats too, but whereas the cold isn't going to kill that yellow rust, it's not going to get any worse. So make a note of where you're finding it. If you've got outstanding herbicide tickets hanging on the wall of the office and you want to get them on and you're looking for the right day to do it, then speak to your advisor and just be aware of any timing cutoff, growth stage restrictions and so forth, and make sure you're still within the legal label restrictions and that the crop is still safe. Aphids, few and far between, and as wingless aphids are very, very unlikely to get much worse because they don't move around that much, and as things start to cool down, I just think monitor the situation there and deal with them in the spring if you have to then. But for now, I think just let the spiders and the little predators have them for their Christmas dinner, and fingers crossed for a fair hard winter over the coming few weeks to knock all these little bugs out and get us set for a bumper 2025 season. So not much else for agronomy then in 2024. That's me done. I'll be back in a few weeks when we can start all over again. But I just want to wish everyone out there a happy, peaceful, and above all a very healthy Christmas, along with a worry-free and very prosperous 2025. So let's see what 2025 brings.
Thank you, and all the very best to you and Andrea, Sean, and we'll see you towards the end of January.
The Week in Agriculture. This is the Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
In a moment, we'll hear from agricultural chaplain Alan Robson with some thoughts on Christmas. We'll check the markets, but first on the Farming Programme podcast, as we head towards the end of 2024, a year many will want to forget, what's in store to start the new year? Well, there's Lammer, and of course the Oxford Farming Conference to kick the year off, chaired this year by Jeff Sansom, who replaces Will Evans. Jeff joins us this morning with a look ahead to the conference. First, though, for those who don't know you, give us a potted history of your background.
Although you're still actively involved in a family farm over in Worcestershire, you've done a lot more advising and working elsewhere in agriculture, haven't you? Including a trip to, or some time in Russia and Ukraine. That must have been interesting and challenging from a different way.
Yeah, it certainly was. Yes, I started life as an agronomist with ADAS for a good 20 years, including working in the East in Lincolnshire and Cambridgeshire and around that patch. And then I was invited to go to Slovakia to do some agronomy training. And to cut a long story short, I then spent 10 years in Eastern Europe in places like Russia, Ukraine, Bosnia, Kosovo, Moldova, you name it, on agricultural projects. And the main theme of all of that was helping them change towards a market economy. They were pretty tough times, and obviously some were very successful, and looking backwards, others haven't been so successful. But it gave you a great perspective to put our own industry, to put a perspective on our own industry. And after that, I came back to UK and worked with the Rural Development Service, and most latterly Natural England as their head of agriculture.
And yeah, you still are actively involved in the family farm. And I think looking at your family very briefly, it kind of typifies what's happened with a lot of family farms, doesn't it? Not every generation automatically takes over the farm. You've got three children with very varied careers.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, we're just going backwards a little bit. My family tenant farmed the same farm for a good 100 years, and then the estate was broken up due to death duties, actually, which is quite topical. And we got a chance to buy, which we did. So I'm the fifth generation here. But as you say, I've got three children and they've all followed their passions. So one is a farm manager managing 1,500 acres of intensive vegetables. One is a vicar up in Bradford, and the other is a professional folk musician. So You couldn't get much more varied than that. And as I've said to people, I'll probably never be rich, but I'll be entertained, spiritually cared for and fed by my children.
Brilliant. Yeah. And it does really typify the way lots of family farms are going, isn't it? That it's not necessarily being instantly or automatically handed over to the next generation now.
No, that's right. And it's a small farm, but it's changed so much over the years. At one point, my father and his three brothers were working for my grandfather, delivering milk into Worcestershire during the war years. Then we developed into field vegetables and we would have 30 or 40 seasonal workers. And quite honestly, now it's something which keeps me, you know, busy in my spare time and weekends, more or less. And that's how things have evolved. And we, like every other business, we've diversified on the farm. We've diversified off the farm using whatever skills we have.
Let's talk about the conference, because you're taking over this year. It's a conference that used to have a bit of a reputation for being rather academic and maybe a little bit old boyish, but it really has been dragged, sometimes kicking and screaming, into the 21st century. What's the theme for this year?
The theme this year is facing change, finding opportunity. And it was a theme that we decided on more or less this time last year. It seemed absolutely right to recognise that there are a lot of challenges in the industry, but equally there's a lot of people out there who will see every challenge as an opportunity. I think at the time we weren't expecting quite so much change as we've seen this year, and the word change has been somewhat politically hijacked, so it's incredibly topical, but we will be having some great speakers in terms of how they are tackling today's issues and building those into opportunities for their personal lives and their businesses.
Lots of speakers. One of the early ones, of course, is the Secretary of State, Steve Reid. I wonder how he'll be welcomed.
Well, Oxford is a place where we have civilised debate, and I'm sure that will continue. Yes, I'm really looking forward to that session. I'm chairing it, and I'm hoping they will have something new to announce. They invariably do. And it's inevitable that question time, you know, some of the very current challenging issues will arise. But I don't want it to be a single themed question time debate. There's a lot of other things that we can discuss in that session, be it, you know, opportunities within a food strategy, some of the environmental issues and opportunities therein. So I'm looking forward to what might be a challenging session, but hopefully it will be a very one also packed with opportunity and an intelligent debate.
And there are plenty of partner sessions, as usual, aren't there, around the conference?
Yes, there's, I think, 9 or 10 partner sessions, and it's quite a unique part of Oxford, really, where partners can come along and propose their own agendas, and every one of these is packed, and there's a whole wide range of them, again, with some excellent organisations, some excellent speakers.
And you're welcoming back the wonderful Wilfred Emanuel Jones, the black farmer who was a guest on the farming programme a couple of years ago. He's got a fantastic story to tell, hasn't he?
Yes, he has. And again, really looking forward to that one. And William Emanuel Jones, he's being hosted in the partner session from RABI. And RABI are our charity partner this year. So we have them as official charity partner. And alongside RABI, we do have all the major farming mental health charities being represented.
Excellent. And to cap it all right at the end, as ever with these conferences, we'll talk about the future, moving forward.
Moving forward, absolutely. And the last morning of Oxford, and the last morning, indeed afternoon this year, is very much looking at inspiring stories as to how people have addressed personal business issues and grabbed those and move forward. And we have some superb sessions there, including a presentation from the founder of the DPG charity, who has a wonderfully moving but inspiring story to tell about a personal family situation gave rise to this charity. We have a great friend of mine from Canada, Barb Stefanushin-Cote, who has a lovely family story to tell about how they downsized from a massive Saskatchewan farm, sold up, and then took a really bold decision to create a distillery on the sides of Saskatoon. Very entertaining. and a range of other speakers who will bring, you know, hopefully a great uplift and inspiring end to what should be a lovely conference.
I'm sure it will be. Now, it is sold out for general tickets, but can somebody who can't get there see what's going on? Is there any online feed or anything
like
that?
Yes, absolutely. We're sold out. We're well sold out. And we have a waiting list, but that's up to about 40 or so now. So the chances of anyone getting a ticket is a little bit remote. But yes, as you say, we have a digital offer. It's covers all of the main stage sessions, and it's £75. So it's incredibly good value if anyone wants to sign into that and watch it from home.
All right, Jeff. Well, we'll look forward to seeing you in early January. And thanks for joining us on the Farming Programme. Well, I wish you and yours and everybody involved with Oxford Farming Conference 2025 a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
And thank you. And the same to all your listeners, Steve. Many thanks.
All you need to know is at ofc.org.uk.
The Farming Programme.
Market reports.
Starting as usual with livestock and from Louth Market. Good morning, Edward Middleton.
Good morning, Steve. A day for the prime heifers in the prime ring this week, with an all-in average in the heifers of 330.83 pence per kilo. Top price in the both the pence per kilo and the pounds per head were F. Wallace and Son of Biscothorpe at 348 pence per kilo, or £2,057. On to the store cattle. Top in the bulls were Aldridge Livestock of Alford, with some Limmy bulls at £1,320. Top price in the steers came from A.W. Lewis and Son of Grainthorpe at £1,260. And in the heifers, J.E. Holden of, and Son of Tetney, topped at £1,480. The next store cattle sale will be in the new year, which will be Monday the 6th of January. Moving on to the sheep, a super trade this week in the lambs with an SQQ of 318.31 pence per kilo and an all-in average pounds per head of £137.45. Top spot 3 weeks in the run for PS Marsden and Son of Lincoln, who topped at £180 for a pen of 55 kilo Texels. Onto the cull ewes, an average of £125.40. An absolute flying trade this week. These ewes are really coming to some money now, with a top spot of £215 for a super Texel ewe from Scrivelsby Farms Limited of Horncastle. Mules topped at £133 for Scrivelsby Farms Limited. Onto the store lambs, an average of £113.21. An excellent show of stronger lambs forward with a super average. Top pen went to IJ Mason Farming of Crowell, who sold a super run of mule bred lambs, topping at £127 and averaging 118.88 pence for 35 lambs sold. With business as usual for all classes of sheep on December the 30th. Our next cattle sale and store cattle sale will be on January the 6th. May I take this opportunity to wish all the vendors, buyers and everyone that supported the market over the last year a very Merry Christmas, and we look forward to catching up in the new year. I'm Edward Middleton, auctioneer at Louth Livestock Market.
Thanks, Edward, and all the very best to you and all the team at Louth Livestock Market. So to the grain markets, let's wrap up the year with open fields. Alice Killam. Morning, Alice.
Good morning, Steve. As the last full trading week draws to a close before Christmas, so too does yet another steady week on the markets. Monday saw wheat trade £3 up and lost some of that on Tuesday. What a great surprise. We've spoken a lot over the last few weeks about the word demand, and it is this which does seem to have helped a little over the last few sessions. The first main news item certainly concerns demand. In the latest Saudi wheat tender, purchasing a total of 804,000 tonnes for delivery in the new year, this is 200,000 tonnes more than initially planned, and just gave a reminder to the world that wheat is cheap. There may also be some spot demand appear if this story is to develop. Some of you will already be aware of this story regarding damage to part of the Moselle River in Germany. Following some quick repairs, it is being reported that some boats are being able to pass through the damaged lock. But in the last couple of days, the UK has seen some spot inquiries for business. Some are clearly working on just-in-time supply. The US market is an interesting one. Crops are forecast to be large, but they are so far in front year on year with regards to their export numbers. The key number here will be the speed at which they are getting through their corn. In addition to the exports, what will the new administration and the new President Trump do when they take over? As well as keeping an eye on trade deals and or potential tariffs, there is also their own domestic ethanol programme to keep an eye on too. Midweek, a US government funding bill was released suggesting E15 gasoline would be able to be used over a full 12-month programme. Currently, this is banned from July to September. This would change consumption numbers if it happened. An interesting story came out of Russia. Wheat, which is destined for Syria, originally purchased from Russia, now seems to have hit the buffers as payment hasn't been made. It is rumoured that Ukrainian wheat may be used as an alternative. Russian analysts have cut their projections for Russian wheat output to under 80 million tonnes now to 78.7 million tonnes. This is probably our best chance for global recovery of wheat values. If we do see the poor conditions continue, then holding on to some old crop as cover for a potential downside to new also might help us. But we're quite away from this today. For us guys in the UK, there are still a few things we are battling with. A strong pound and big import numbers, confirmed only up to the end of October so far. Whilst there are some global stories that could affect and indeed help us to recover to some fashion, we can't ignore what's in front of us and what we must compete with in the next 6 months. We have lots to move and can't move everything in the last 3 months of the season. Some guide prices for this week, circa Friday morning. Feed wheat, January 175 to 185, March 180 to 190, May 185 to 195, with Group 1 milling premiums sitting at around £30. Feed barley, January 150 to 160, May 155 to 165, and oilseed rape, January 415 to 420, and May 420 to 425. As usual, please call for firm values.
Thank you, Alice, and a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to you and all at Openfield.
The Farming Programme. 5 day forecast.
A windy start to the week with gusts from the west up to 50 miles per hour, but easing from Tuesday, followed by a calm and cold second half with daytime highs of 5 or 6 and similar overnight. A little bit of rain around on Tuesday, otherwise a mostly dry week with a bit of sunshine under high pressure from Monday. Now, it wouldn't be Christmas without a few well-chosen festive words from our friend from the chaplaincy, Canon Alan Robson.
Oddly enough, I was reminiscing in my head earlier this morning, and my dad, who was a rough, tough steelworker, he had in the 1960s desiderata, and it was on the wall. Dad bought a really ugly framed thing. I've just picked out lines that resonated with me this morning. It's Max Ehrman's reflection. Go placidly amid the noise and the haste, and remember what peace there may be in silence. Speak your truth quietly and clearly, and listen to others, even to the dull and the ignorant. They too have their story. And then later on, take kindly the counsel of the years, gracefully surrendering the things of youth. Nurture strength of spirit to shield you in sudden misfortune. But do not distress yourself with dark imaginings. Many fears are born of fatigue and loneliness. Therefore, be at peace with God, whatever you conceive him to be, and whatever your labours and aspirations in the noisy confusion of life, keep peace in your soul. Last line, with all its sham, drudgery and broken dreams, it is still a beautiful world. Be cheerful. Strive to be happy. And I guess that's it. We all have to strive to be happy in 2025.
Alan, that's perfect. I do remember that being recorded and released as a single back in the 60s, if I'm remembering correctly. But a beautiful piece and beautifully written. So on that note, I shall wish you and yours and your congregation and flock a very Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Thank you for joining us once again.
All the best. All the best. You too.
Oh, and I mustn't forget to tell you that the First Farmers Christmas Carol service is on this afternoon. It's at the Methodist Church on Lincoln's Balegate. Everybody's welcome. It starts at 3. Well, that's it for 2024. We're back on Sunday, the 5th of January. Until then, from all of us here at the Farming Programme podcast, all the regulars, Sean, Alice and Edward, Andy Marsh, Charlotte Lineker and me, Steve Orchard, I hope you managed to take a break, at least for a day, and have a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.